UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals. Bringing knowledge to your world, here's Melanie Cole.
The interventional cardiology team at UAB Hospital recently added to its long-standing reputation as a pioneer in the development and implementation of stents by becoming the first in Alabama to offer patients with coronary artery disease a new treatment option that disappears over time. My guest today is Dr. Mark Sass. He's an associate professor and an interventional cardiologist at UAB Medicine. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sass. What is the current standard for stent implantation as it stands now?
The current standard is using metal stents. The original stents that we used were bare metal stents that did not have drug elution on them, and they were originally made of stainless steel. And since they had high restenosis rates, they were not used as widely as they were before, because they just failed at about a 20-30% rate. Then we developed drug-eluting stents, and they were, again, originally stainless steel with a polymer that had a drug coating on them, and they reduced restenosis probably to about 5-7%. And now we have a new generation of stents that are cobalt and chromium, and the other stent group is one that's made out of cobalt and platinum, and they also have drug coating on them, and they again reduce the restenosis rate to about 5-7%. The only problem is that they're made of metal, and that the metal lasts forever and it stays within the artery forever. So that's the downside of that. So those are used in the majority of cases. In our group, interventional cardiology group, we probably stated that we would use these standard stents in approximately 90% of our cases. And now with the advent of bioabsorbable stents, ones that, quote, disappear, we will probably use those in a greater proportion of patients, but there are only certain subsets of patients that we can use them really safely in those groups, because they were not studied in the kind of more in sicker patient populations and in patients with more difficult coronary disease. So we've kind of, at least here, been trying to be as close to the original studies that were performed in the United States. However, in Europe, they've been using them for many years in much greater and wider patient populations, ones with they overlap the stents, which we have tended not to do in the initial phases of using these, using them in heavily calcified arteries for treatment of lesions that are also longer, more calcified, and more difficult as far as their anatomy. So now, with greater experience, we may be using them, but those are not the patients in the original studies.
So what would be the criteria for patients or contraindications for using the absorbed bioresorbable vascular coronary stent?
Group of patients that it's used for is patients with kind of relatively healthy vessels, ones that have plaques that are severely narrowing the artery but not heavily calcified. They should meet certain minimum diameter criteria. The stent is best served in vessel sizes that are about 3 up to 4 millimeters. Once they're starting to be smaller, those stents, they don't have stents in that size. And then also there's a potential for a greater risk of stent thrombosis. So in those populations that have bigger vessels or smaller vessels, we tend to use the standard bare metal stents. The other group that we are also thinking about using them, though, is that there may be tend to be younger patients where if they have a significant lesion and that down the road we're hoping that the stent will disappear and then they'll regain their vasomotor reactivity, which is the kind of compliance and kind of softness of the vessel that may be lost if you put a metal stent in, because the metal stent is very rigid and then the vessel kind of loses its ability to react like a normal vessel without a stent. So the groups that I would consider the ones that I've done is the ones that are younger, have bigger vessels, less complex anatomy. The problem with the bare metal stents, when I say less complex, with the bioabsorbable stents, is that they're scaffolds. They're not metal, so we can't post-dilate the stent as much as we would with a true metal stent. So we have to kind of assess the vessel a little bit better prior to putting them in, making sure that there's not heavy calcification, because we may not be able to expand the stent as well as we would if we had a metal stent in there that has greater radial strength.
So do you think as technology changes, dissolving stents will still have these drawbacks compared to metallic stents?
I think there's always going to be those drawbacks, because in order for it to disappear, chemically, because it's a salt, that it's going to absorb and it's just not going to be as rigid. So there's these populations that have heavy calcium, heavy fibrous tissue in there that even makes regular metal stents difficult to expand. So there's always going to be those patient populations which would not be ideal candidates for a bioresorbable scaffold.
Does the medical management after stent implantation change with the absorbed bioresorbable stent?
The initial management is the same. It's aspirin indefinitely, like every patient with coronary disease. However, we're hoping with long-term studies, we don't have to be as aggressive with dual antiplatelet therapy. Groups that feel that longer dual antiplatelet therapy in certain patient subsets is advisable. Our current FDA recommendation is to have dual antiplatelet therapy, aspirin, or other agents such as Prasugrel, Ticagrelor, or Plavix for at least 1 year. European recommendations are 6 months. However, if you have a longer stented segment or you have stented a smaller segment that may have a greater risk of stent thrombosis, you may want to continue the Plavix for longer than 1 year, even up to 2 years. Some people do indefinitely, especially if there is if the patient came in with like a ST elevation myocardial infarction and they put in a long stent, then sometimes we kind of look at the patient and say, well, you're at higher risk of stent thrombosis. You haven't had any bleeding complications, so therefore we may continue it longer. And that is just because we're always worried about stent thrombosis. Stent thrombosis is when the platelets attract to the metal that may not be endothelialized properly. So if it's not endothelialized properly, we're always worried about stent thrombosis. So this is our greatest fear as interventional cardiologists. So hopefully in the long term, if you have a stent that technically disappears, we may be able to get away with less aggressive dual antiplatelet therapy, because we have seen in multiple studies that the longer the patients are on dual antiplatelet therapy, their increased they have increased risk of bleeding. And increased risk of bleeding is always associated with a poorer outcome.
And in just the last few minutes, how can a community physician refer a patient to UAB Medicine?
I mean, if they are interested in doing that, they can always call the MIST line. The MIST line, it gets us in contact with any of the interventional cardiologists, especially the interventional cardiologists online, or they can refer through the clinic to any one of to myself or any of the other my colleagues if they want to have an outpatient clinic visit. A lot of the times for stents, it's always difficult because if they get a catheterization at an outside hospital, the patient wants it done at that time. So we would have to consider that a little bit more carefully up front if they're considering a bioabsorbable stent.
Tell us about your team at UAB Medicine. Why is it so great to work with them?
The reason is that I think, again, it's a large hospital with a very diverse patient population. So we deal with from the just regular cardiology patients who have relatively typical coronary disease all the way up to very to patients with heart transplants, with kidney transplants, liver transplants. So we take care of very complex patients. So we see a gambit of different types of disease processes that make us, I think, even a better interventionalist. And then also because we're a teaching institution, we're constantly teaching our fellows and medical students and kind of being on the cutting edge of technology. And then also I think that we have our section chief, Dr. Lisar, has made it a point to use a lot of imaging, IVUS and OCT and fractional flow reserve measurements, so we can really assess we have a great expertise in assessing vessels, their size, their degree of calcium. So I think in that respect, we're an ideal center to assess patients for absorbable stents. It's not that other people don't do that in the community, but we have we do a significant amount of adjunct imaging prior to putting in stents. And I think just because our section chief has published widely about that, and we have learned a lot from each other about how to put these stents in and how to do all of these adjunct imaging studies while we're putting in stents. So I think it boils down to is that we're a teaching institution. We have a very wide patient population that really makes us experts in all types of coronary disease.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sass. It's great information. You're listening to UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, you can go to uabmedicine.org/physicians. That's uabmedicine.org/physician. This is Melanie Cole. Thanks so much for listening.